All right.
Hello. We're
live.
We're live.
How are you doing?
Good. It's sunny in Toronto.
Yeah?
Still warm.
Dude, we have had a great weather like all week in Seattle. Yeah. It's beautiful and sunny today. Yeah, I don't want to do any work.
I don't want to be excited.
Friday, it's beautiful. And like every time it's beautiful here, I'm like, oh, I should go outside and do some stuff and get ice cream with my wife. And my wife's like, yeah, we got to do it before it gets cold and rainy. And then we keep having that day like 7 days in a row. And finally, I was like, we're not getting ice cream tonight. You know, like we've had a lot of ice cream. I don't know if that's appropriate. yeah, it's funny. Well, okay. Welcome to the Gregory and Paul Show. I'm Gregory.
I'm Paul.
And we break down the latest in startups, SaaS, AI, whatever the internet is debating this week. Always aiming for smart takes. Admittedly, we have many, many dumb ones. Of course, we love memes and meme stocks. We'll be talking about meme stocks.
Yeah, meme stocks this today. We stream every Friday live on X and LinkedIn, Pacific noon and at 3 Eastern. We post this video straight to YouTube afterwards with minimal edits. With I really appreciate your cover art. Amazing cover art that Gregory brews up. I guess someday we'll get this across all of podcast platforms.
You know, it's funny. That Ghibli thing happened on ChatGPT at the time.
Yeah.
And I was having so much fun with it that it was great that I found like a home for it as the artwork for the podcast.
It's so
and cool. Then it's so fun to play with because like when we have a guest, I just take their photo like off of LinkedIn and say like, add this person. And it just adds them right into it. Like every time I do it, I still am shocked and surprised at how it works. Because I remember like having to draw that stuff by hand, you know?
Draw that stuff, Photoshop, it wouldn't even turn out as well. Crazy, isn't it?
It got better at text. I had a couple of techniques if people are curious. Like I'm able to create the images separately and then make the text separately and then I have to assemble it in Canva or something. I tried to do it all in like one shot in AI. It just cannot get the layout perfect to get it to fit in the frame so we can use it for a YouTube thumbnail. So I was hoping to do it entirely with AI, but there's some kind of post-production assembly that has to happen, which is like, it's not very difficult to do. But anyway, you know, what is our number one topic today? What do we want to talk about?
Well, there's lots of going on this week across social media. Do you want to talk about the
Larry?
Larry Ellison?
Oh, I think we should totally start with this here. Let me share. Yeah, this one's good. Let me share this one. Yeah.
So I haven't looked into this, but is this confirmed? This.
Yes, totally confirmed. That's the best one I found.
That's amazing. So, okay. So tell me if I'm wrong. I know that multiple companies were bidding for the rights to TikTok. Or the U.S. entity known as TikTok, will they? So is Larry in the front running seat? Has he purchased TikTok? And what does it actually mean when he owns TikTok?
Yeah, it's long rumored, right?
Yeah, of course.
And right. So I did read whatever announcement that came out regarding this. And so my take on it and my read was that it's, let's say, a consortium where there's at least 3 investors that are named. There could be other people too.
Right.
It's A16Z, Larry. I think there's one other investor, Silver Lake Partners, perhaps. So there were 3 investors that were named in the headline. And the portion that Oracle will be supporting them with is they'd all live on Oracle servers, which has been something that I actually am not clear. Like I thought they were supposed to be doing that or that was a plan. Like this idea that Oracle would be the host has been around for a long time.
Correct.
Like more than a year. So it's kind of like the world's worst kept secret that somehow at least Larry would have a hand in like helping move TikTok to some kind of American ownership. You know, I think what was interesting too is like there was a bunch of people tweeting how like they missed the deadline, and how could they extend it? Obviously, they were just kind of organizing the deal and announced the deal. But we talked about last week too. I'm excited to see Larry back, being a player, Silicon Valley, getting involved with all this new stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm supportive of this move. I think that like whatever we did to like quasi nationalize it or just take some control of an entity that a lot of people theorize is a perhaps even an espionage initiative by the CCP in China, that we did something to try to like
protect the
data. Protect it or mitigate it or deal with it. I think we did it in a great way. Like we could have just banned it, which I don't think was right. I think that would be very un-American. Right. I think we found a really good solution. Whether I don't know if it solves the problem, like the technology that I don't know the details of that, but it seems to be going in the right direction is how I would frame it.
Yeah. From what I understand, TikTok data will now be stored in Oracle servers, right? And it's like and it's owned by a consortium. I'm reading here. Silver Lake's part of it.
It is Silver Lake, right?
Andreessen Horowitz is part of it. A to Z. So, I agree with you. I think overall it's a good thing. Divesting the ownership to U.S. companies, data stays on U.S. soil, right? Out of the prying hands of foreign and countries and entities. It's overall a great thing.
Yeah, it's very logical, right? It's all rumors about like what the possible espionage is. Like the rumors I always heard were that, you know, not just TikTok specifically, but if you gather enough data from all these social networks, it's very easy to blackmail people.
Very, very easy. And it's, it's marketing, right? You get to decide what people see all day.
Yeah, I'm less enthusiastic, or I believe that that'll change less ultimately. Like, do you really think like the algorithm is going to change and the content will be different? Was it 60 Minutes or something where they were like, the Chinese version is spinach and the American version is Cheetos. They were like trying to like say that the TikTok we get isn't good for you. I don't know even how much I believe in that ultimately, but
I believe it. For sure. For sure.
You think that TikTok in China is spinach?
Well, like, I don't know if that's dramatic, but for sure. For example, I'm in Canada. So, like, when things happen in the US, I don't get this in my algorithm.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, whenever people complain about, for example, a few days ago, there was huge events in the news cycle. I barely got anything in my stream. So location definitely affects how the algo presents news to you.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens, right? Like, that's an unknown. Like what happens, like specifically with content moderation and how they manage.
Yeah, I want to see how this pans out, and if anyone will make it the spinach version afterwards.
I find it hard to believe. Like I think some of it is Chinese propaganda trying to make China look much more attractive than it is. Mm. Yeah. Right. Have you ever seen those crazy videos about all the Chinese e-commerce and for an American, it seems bizarre. Like people are on like live video selling stuff and like why they like to buy it live. Like that's a big value prop or live video happens to be like the e-commerce.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't seem to catch on here. Like,
yeah, like Facebook tried to make social shopping a thing, right? But I can't remember who said this, but there is a fundamental like culture differences in how Americans shop and Chinese people shop. So like, for example, Chinese shoppers tend to look at what celebrities are buying and tries to mimic the pattern. Versus the Chinese shoppers tend to look at more price sensitive and they're more about group buying. So if a lot of people are buying this thing, then they have more trust versus like believing what the celebrity is endorsing. So like social shopping kind of makes sense. Yeah, I do. I believe that.
I think it's hard to generalize like that. I don't know.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Like this is how my parents would shop and I would shop as well. Like I would never, like I would not buy it because a celebrity endorses it.
I only buy whatever Sydney Sweeney's endorsing. I have all American Eagle right now. Like I just went out and
see totally work.
My entire look.
Basically prove my point then.
I love them. I don't know if people are aware too with like the whole drama with Intel. We don't even have it on the docket, but like Intel and Nvidia. And how like, you know, they were like, Nvidia was forced to acquire a portion of Intel, right? And
right,
Intel
right.
stock went up and there was a photo of like a chip manufacturing plant, but it was Sydney Sweeney making Intel a great place to work. It was really funny. All right, let's move on from that. Okay, the Sydney Sweeney memes on Twitter are just off the hook, hilarious these days. Like anything good that happens, they just put her face on it. It's so funny. I just
turns
love it
out
every
even
time.
Better.
Okay, let's move on to this. We've got this huge thing. There's a bunch of articles in here about AI news. Maybe I'll try to summarize what's going on here, but
yeah.
We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. I think it's really important, right? So I would say that, like, the AI narrative seems to have changed dramatically in maybe the last year. So last year
Correct.
And earlier, there was a lot of like discussion, punditry, Twitter arguments over the fact that it appeared big tech was the ones who were going to benefit from
Correct.
AI.
Yeah, they
right?
were going to win everything.
And I guess ChatGPT is not a startup. They're a giant company who raised bazillions of trillions of mucho dollars. So maybe they're not a startup, right?
Sure.
That all of these like LLMs and the way that all worked and the requirements for data centers, like how are startups going to benefit from this, right? And one model to rule them all. There was all this stuff. So fast forward to today. And it appears like maybe the opposite is now happening. So let's put up this first one about Salesforce. So it's behind
I can do it.
You got it?
Yeah.
So it's behind a paywall at the, oh, you got it, at the information. So this article is, I think it's exclusive. I couldn't find anywhere else. Painting a picture that Salesforce is really struggling with their agent force. And so they made, you know, a bombastic proclamation, as Mark Benioff is known to do, that they were going to make a big investment in AI. And they talked a lot about like replacing your workforce with agents, and AI agents were replacing people. And they really went full on with that narrative. And now we come to hear that, yeah, they're struggling. Stock hasn't performed very well year to date. So I would put this as like exhibit A of big tech company that does not seem to be benefiting from AI. And then we have the other one about Microsoft. I don't know if you can share that one as well. So there's another article in the information. And so perhaps information is biased, but I actually think what they're reporting is quite good. That Copilot, Microsoft's AI initiative, they're struggling as well to monetize that, right? So let's call that exhibit B in my analysis that, you know, big tech is now perhaps showing some signs of trouble when it comes to monetizing and benefiting from AI. You know, Google and ChatGPT maybe don't totally fall into this narrative. Google is doing quite well. I've been using AI right. mode. I like AI mode. I think ChatGPT is fantastic. I have it on my phone. I use it for everything. It's well known that ChatGPT is not profitable. They're not monetizing where they would need to be a
right.
Profitable company. But I think that the advertising technology or infrastructure, whatever they release, will quickly solve that. So you have those companies who are doing well. But on the flip side, lots of startups in the AI space are making tons of money, scaling quickly. And it looks like to me, you could paint a pretty clear narrative or make a strong argument for the fact that AI is now benefiting startups. You know, you've got these companies going from like zero to 100, 200, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue in, you know, under a year. It's unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it in the startup space. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I would agree. I think AI right now in enterprise adoption is still to be determined. I think it's just people. People fear technology. People still is scared of AI in some sense. So when you get into enterprises, the director level, the manager level, and just mandate them to fully adopt AI, people are going to push back. So, you know, like 5% of Salesforce, only 5% of Salesforce, 150,000 plus customers pay for Agentforce. That is a really low adoption number. Where
I agree.
Where, you know, at the beginning of 2025, people are saying this is the year of AI agents. It's going to essentially take over the entire ecosystem. This is very low number. Very low number.
Yeah, I think that like Salesforce's technology and customers are, their legacy customers are not excited about adopting new products, new technology. And so I think in hindsight, it's not surprising that this isn't rolling out as quickly
as
people had hoped. And then if you look at like Cursor, Windsurf, all of these new AI companies, they appeal to early adopters. A lot of these tools are for developers. The killer use case right now seems to be vibe coding and tools that automate certain aspects of like coding and developing. Those tools are not things that Salesforce sells, right? That's not their audience. It's not their business.
Yeah, right.
And those are the type of people on the like AI side who will adopt those tools really quickly. So now knowing what we know, it's no surprise that like these startups that are developing all of these really interesting vibe tools are the ones scaling really rapidly, and that the legacy SaaS companies, some of these legacy technology companies, are the ones struggling to roll out their AI initiatives and get adoption of their AI tools.
Yeah, so I think it makes sense why the companies that are doing well are what you call AI wrappers. So like the Cursors of the world, Lovable, right, Bolt. But essentially what this means is, I think we're still trying to figure out what the best interface with all of these AI models are. Interface as in like, how do we use these things? What's the best way to use that? And like so far, the best way to use it is like, you know, put it into your IDE, which is your like dev tool. And then like giving instructions, it'll write code for you or code up a website, right? Or edit your photos a little bit. Outside of that, in like B2B context, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we figure that out yet.
Well, you know, I think, good.
Right, like besides like AI note taker for meetings, what are some other uses for AI? Well, obviously, I don't know. Maybe Palantir, companies like Palantir has figured it out.
Yeah. I think, I think what you're describing, or the way I look at it is like, the chat tools today mimic how developers write code, and that's why they're adopting this stuff. And so it's easy for them to adopt. I'm not convinced that like a chat interface is going to be the way that everybody wants to interface with this stuff.
Correct.
Because like some of the stuff I've been doing recently with like MCP servers, and like I still feel like it still feels really antiquated. Like I'm like using a command line interface with BASIC or something. I looked at it and I'm like, this does not seem to be the way that I think the average person wants to interface with this stuff. I think buttons and some type of user interface are the way to go. Like the command, if it's not command line, but it's natural language, it's so laborious and takes a lot of time to get where you want to go. I think interfaces that kind of just know a whole lot and do what you want them to do by pushing a button are really what consumers want. And so the more you can anticipate that, provide the right context and they just kind of click one button and it's good to go. I don't think they want to do like a lot of work. Yeah. Right now, to use these things, got to go in there and type a bunch of stuff. It's still a lot of effort to get the result that you want. And like if Google search, you know, wasn't so cluttered with spam marketing and advertising, maybe we'd be in a different place, right? There was a point where Google search, I think for the average person, worked really well. They typed in what they wanted and then they kind of got a result that was pretty close.
Yeah.
And then that continued to decline its usefulness. And so of course, like something new came along and we're like, well, that's better, but that's better only in the context of like the decline of like the experience that the average person was having with Google. Mm,
right. Yeah, I would agree with that. So like, yeah, I don't know what it looks like, right? It just doesn't feel magical enough. It feels like dial-up internet, you know?
Like, using a chat interface?
Yeah, like whatever the form that AI is being interfaced right now, it just feels like dial-up internet. Yeah, it's super useful. It's really cool. You get to like do cool things. But like it also hogs up your phone line and you know, it's annoying because you get disconnected all the time.
It felt just like I was back computing in the 80s, like typing in stuff and then it responds back with text. And I'm like, it's like very exciting, but like the visual experience is not exciting. That's where I was like,
right,
there's definitely a better way to do this. It's interesting how we've gone full circle. Like, I can't believe it. Sometimes I'm like typing in stuff and I'm like, tell me all the services. And then it like starts listing me all the services and I have to scroll back and forth. Like, that's not the best way to do it.
It's exactly like that, right? Like we've gone back to like, we've went back in time. I remember when I first got onto internet, I was in like IRC chat rooms and people would build like all of these different commands that you can call on in IRC chat rooms. So you do like slash like list services and it would be like, okay, you can do all of these things. That's exactly what it feels like, right?
Yeah, that's not a better way to interface stuff. Of course not. It's very funny. We've come full circle. I thought this one thing was kind of this one article about Google and AI is quite interesting relative to like what we're speaking about.
Yeah.
So this thing said that like, hey, you know, startups are expanding so fast that it's actually really good for Google's cloud product. I thought this was interesting. So I think it's maybe not a counter narrative to the idea that big tech was the ones who are like suffering or struggling with AI. Like, you know, these companies are big and I just thought this was quite interesting that it shows that these companies, Lovable, Windsurf, they're scaling so fast that like the needs that they have regarding cloud services are just ballooning. So it's not a huge surprise that like, I think big tech wins no matter what. I mean, that's maybe a different way to kind of frame the argument. Like they might not win with consumer adoption of their AI tools,
right?
But they'll win with like, you know, Microsoft has Azure, Amazon has AWS, and Google has Google Cloud. So they'll definitely be successful even if these what are relative to them smaller startups
succeed. Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like Google is a very what's the word? Google is a very like contradictory company. It sells both to consumers and businesses. Obviously, I don't know what their revenue numbers look like, but I highly doubt their consumer facing product is profitable. But like Gmail is relatively free. And
well, the search is huge, dude. The search is, I mean, so okay,
consumer products. Right.
Like Waymo is technically a consumer product, and like that thing is growing like a weed.
Gotcha.
They're way more successful than I thought they would be with Waymo. It's incredible.
Do you think they will ever get profitable?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. I think Google, how do I frame this? You know, people are really critical right now of any service or innovation that requires a massive amount of funding. And it's easy to be critical. Like you're putting all this money into it. Where's the revenue? Where's the profits?
Right.
I think Google and maybe let's even say at a larger scale, technology companies over the past 20 years have shown that like if you invest in a large enough market, you can make a profit eventually.
Right.
So I think Uber demonstrates that like huge market. They raised a ton of money and it worked. There were a lot of other companies that did something similar, didn't work. I would argue like either something happened and the company failed, and that happens. Like they just run into some challenge and it tanks the company, or they just weren't building for a big enough market, which I think is more likely in the case of a lot of the other people who raised, let's say, too much money. They just weren't chasing a big enough market. Yeah, so when I look at like Waymo, some of the things that like Google's investing, as long as what they're investing in is a really big market, it seems like they'll come out the other side a success, right? That's what happened with YouTube. Like they spent years monetizing that. Like it was so long ago, I think everyone's forgotten, because I remember when they acquired it, it was 2004. And so they invested in that for years. To I want to even say like 2008, 2009, like they didn't reveal any of the financial metrics till like a couple of years ago. So we don't actually know what it was like. So my guess was always that they didn't make any money. It was wildly unprofitable for like 5, 7, 10 years. I mean, like a really long time.
Yeah.
And now it's a monster, like billions and billions of dollars, incredible business, but they spent and invested an enormous sum. And I think if like it was very public what they were spending 5 years in, people would have been super critical. I even think like people just gave up being critical of it because Google just, they just kept investing in it and everyone just like shut up. Like, and it kept growing and it was obvious it was going to be a success.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I see the same thing with like Waymo. I see Waymo, the same thing with
Google Cloud. They spend a lot of money on like giving out credits, trying to get people to convert from other cloud hosts onto Google Cloud.
They've been investing for years and years and years an enormous sum of money. What's the other service? Just the AI stuff in general. So like all these chips and all this investment, all these companies are making
Like
I think I think it's gonna work out. 100%. I think it's not a waste of investment. In the end.
Gotcha. Yeah, like they're sitting on so much data that their AI product has to be good. You know, like there's no excuse for their AI product to not
be. Well, I would just say it's a big enough market, they'll make the money back eventually. Who wants to tap into these AI services? If you believe that basically everything will run on it, if your market is everything,
right?
And you believe that at some point in 10 years, automated AI powered robots are going to emerge. You know, there's all these like, which seem perhaps somewhat fantastical right now, these scenarios that show just the insane demand that there will be for AI services. It's very logical, I think, to make these investments. I always go back to the military. I think the Pentagon, I think there's huge demand there that we don't really fully understand. So I think that the demand for AI services, sky's the limit.
Agreed. Shall we talk about Meta?
Oh, yes. Have you tried Meta glasses yet?
No.
I always say I want to, and then I just totally forget about it. It's like I think about it for a minute, and I'm like, that'd be really cool, and then I just move on to like getting a coffee or something. Like it just leaves my mind. Like I have like, it's not something I feel like I walk around every day. I'm like, if only I had
a heads up display in my glasses.
I always think it's cool, and then I never do it.
So what's the context? Did they have like a big conference?
There was some big reveal of the new edition that has a some kind of like He-Man wrist bracelet thing that will offer you additional features and functionality.
Right.
Are you sharing this? I'm trying to share this.
No, you can share.
Oh, I'm working. It's a little slow today.
Sure again. Give me a sec. I'll share it.
Okay. So yeah, there we go. So yeah, they did a demo of the new Meta Ray-Bans came out, and they had the wristband. So the wristband allows you to do like gestures, which I think is actually a really cool interface idea that I'm excited about. The Apple Watch has some of those types of things built in, right? And it kind of knows when you move your hand, like if you're looking at it, which I think is very useful. So I like it in concept, but like this demo did not go well for Mark, and it looks like multiple things failed during the demo.
Yeah.
So not a confidence builder for the new Meta glasses.
Yeah.
I think I always think that Zuckerberg is ultimately correct here. And like earlier, we were talking about like if you invest in a big enough market, you'll make it. But like what I don't know is the market big enough? Like we have alternatives, right? Like spoken, like conversational interfaces. We have mouse and keyboard, which has survived, you know, like an enormously long period of time that no one thought it would.
Yeah.
You have the iPhone kind of touchscreen interface, whatever you want, pinch and touch, whatever you want to call that. So there's a lot of alternatives to like interface with the computer already. Like is the glasses something that we really will need like long-term? Like, I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. Like there's, I feel like, so maybe like AirPods is probably the most recent wearable that did super well. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm using them right now, right? I think
right.
Actually, excellent product.
Excellent, really, really excellent product. Before, like, Bluetooth headphones existed before AirPods, but there's just, like, it's clunky. AirPods reduced the form, did basically Apple-ified Bluetooth headphones. Bluetooth and including microphones, right? I just Meta glasses. I don't know.
You know, Apple did what they're always really good at. They just made it easy.
And so, made it easy, made it widely adopted.
Every other Bluetooth product you get, it can't connect this and that. Oh, it's like, it's can't find it. Gotta reboot it like three times. Like in the car, it's just a disaster. It's so frustrating. These AirPods, they're perfectly seamless. Like my phone rings, they go to my phone. Like I never ever have to worry about it. It like intuitively knows like how I want to use them. It's the best. It's like what Apple is so fantastic at. And yeah. They're still really good at it.
Yeah.
That other people just, I don't know what it is. My guess is that the engineering is actually quite difficult and it's expensive.
It's super, well, it's because they own the entire stack. Right, like
the thing that's
interfacing is with your Apple laptop, your iPhone, your watch, Apple Watch. It keeps in the ecosystem. The protocols are all synced up together. They control everything, the entire stack.
Yeah, yes. People were talking about this during that, like when Tesla was huge, that like the other car companies, there's like, I remember I saw numbers, I couldn't believe it, like 700 software vendors.
Yeah, right.
Like the Bluetooth software is separate from the other software on the separate from the entertainment software. Like, so they all don't communicate with each other, and coordinating it is really, really difficult. Cause Tesla has that full stack advantage too. Like Apple does.
Right. Right. That's kind of like the genius of Steve Jobs, is he wanted to control the entire thing. For the eyeglasses to succeed, I don't know, like there's a platform risk, right? Like on its own, it's cool, but then it needs to connect to your phone. And then like it needs to connect to an app like WhatsApp on the iPhone. There's like four layers of complexities between it now already.
I know, and like I said, we both wear glasses, and like I see this product online or someone's talking about it and I get excited about it.
Yeah.
And then the minute I stop thinking about it in that moment, I walk away and I totally forget about it. Like,
right.
I never had this moment where I'm like, God, it'd be really great. Like actually I always thought one of the killer use cases would be like cycling or running, like in like outdoor sports. Like if I had like a display that could show all my numbers, would be really cool. But like, I never think about that when I'm on my bike.
Right. Do you wear your glasses when you do sports? Like riding a bike?
I have to wear like, you know, sunglasses.
Prescribed sunglasses. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and you know, like really expensive sports glasses that are all aerodynamic. Come on, dude, I don't ride slow. Aerodynamic and stuff. Right? Like they could just put that stuff. I always like, I just don't know why they don't market this for like triathlon and cycling is beyond me.
Exactly.
because it would be safer. Right now, I have to like look down or look at something, or you see people on their bike, like with their phone. It's not safe at all.
So
all that was in your cycling glasses or running glasses.
I would buy the shit out of that. Yeah.
I know. I feel 100%. Like if they had it, I would totally get it. And I'm shocked that like no one has done this. I used to talk a lot about it a couple years ago. And then I just like, for a moment when I was like working the bicycle store, selling bikes on the weekend for fun, we used to talk a lot about this. I was like, why don't they have some like cool display, like connect my bike computer? It'd be great. Like you could see your speed. You could have like safety devices, like, cause there's like radar detectors for cycling and bicycles that shows behind. You could put that all in here. So not, you could just like look forward. Would be fantastic.
That would be fantastic. Like riding through a city, maybe get a little bit of like indicator of where you're going.
Right. Yeah. And like, I always thought too, look, the guys that are into expensive race bicycles and triathlon have unlimited
budget,
disposable income. Yeah.
Right.
$2,000. Right. They would just buy it.
Right. So
they're not price sensitive. Like the pricing, it doesn't even matter for them. So I don't know why a product like that hasn't come out.
I will buy that for biking around the city for sure. If it comes in sunglasses, it will be even better. I will buy this for golfing, right? Like a heads up display to track my ball. That would be amazing.
Oh dude. Cause I play golf. I'm not that great at it. I wish I was better, but I play golf with guys. Like there's rangefinders and there's all kinds of technology
Right.
Yeah. So like, why is that just built into your glasses?
Rangefinders, and then once you whiff a ball into the tall grass, like I spend 5-10 minutes looking for the ball.
I haven't thought about this in a long time, but like I struggle with like why this doesn't exist. Like the sports forward leisure, like upper middle class leisure activity market seems like such an obvious like initial go to market for something like this. Like I don't understand like why they don't have it. I was thinking about this when like Google Glass came out. I was like, why is this not sports related? Why is this not on every athlete in the Olympics? And there's like live video of like from their heads up display or whatever in their event, like the bobsled and all that crazy stuff, and you could see what they were seeing. Like I still think it's like a massive missed opportunity for these types of things. They should be released during the Olympics and then they could be used on every athlete. And then you could see from the athlete's perspective, everything that they're doing, it would be fantastic. Like in professional cycling, they now have like onboard cameras, like on a lot of the bikes front and back. And so you get these very cool videos that show you like in the race and how intense the racing is and stuff. Like that type of video is so exciting. And like why they haven't done that with a product like this, the only answer I can ever come up with is just like, cause there's just too many nerds working on this stuff and they don't do anything athletic.
They don't do any of this.
They don't think about the world in that way.
Okay. 100% agree there. 100%. I don't think you're far off. I think like there's a certain, this is the problem with Silicon Valley, right? Like they've had so much success of building tech that works for people that live in Silicon Valley that they forget that the rest of the world exists.
Yeah, that's my answer. It's like they're too close to it. All the use cases are just like, it was like a cooking use case or something. Like
A cooking use case, like,
I don't know. That's the most boring use case I could possibly come up with for internet connected hyper reality glasses. Like cooking? Like that's the most exciting thing you could come up with.
It solves like a millennial problem, you know?
Who cooks? Everyone orders DoorDash. We can see the numbers. Like the whole thing is preposterous. Like at this point, cooking is like an elite pursuit of like wealthy tech titans or something.
So there you go. So the way that we talk about like bike riding and like golfing, right? Which rest of cooking. The world thinks it's like a rich person's pastime.
Right? Oh my God, dude.
They think cooking is.
Oh my God. That's the nerds hilarious.
In San Fran think cooking is a rich person's pastime.
I mean we know Zuck's into UFC, right? But that's probably like the least
but that's too
applicable sport for glasses. Like, you don't want to get punched in the face with like a $1,000.
Yeah. Correct.
So I understand that, but like,
yeah, he's surfing, he's doing UFC.
He claims to do some bow hunting. You'd think like when he was using his bow, he would want some kind of range finding technology integration with his meta glasses to improve.
That's hilarious. Dude, just pick up a golf club. Suddenly everything starts to make sense.
Oh my God. This reminds me of, it's really funny. Like we're talking about computer interface and computer interface design. You know, I found my old blog on the Wayback Machine from 2003. See if I can bring it up here. And like,
oh man,
I couldn't believe it was in there because someone asked me about like, yeah, dude, here it is. Someone asked me like, or someone was talking about like, oh, I used to like, I had to delete all these offensive like posts on MySpace and all kinds of, like, they were just talking about like social media when they were younger.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I was like in my early 20s, I was writing the same nerd stuff I write on LinkedIn and Twitter today.
Look at that. You're talking about BlackBerry, huge hitting the US, PDA devices, like danger.
Dude, man. The same stuff I do now. I was like, I'm almost embarrassed. Like, I wasn't writing about like, oh, all the drinking and parties and MySpace stuff and like rap groups and everything. Like, I did like all of that too.
I still like
Wu-Tang Clan, but like, but if I said, like, I'm reading this article and like what I said was that the I was dying. BlackBerry's dominance was due to their QWERTY style keyboard. Like, this is so pre-iPhone that I was making this my analysis was that all of these very complicated early PDAs didn't work because their user interface was very hard to use.
Right.
And like, right. Oh my God, Palm Pilot had graffiti. Do you graffiti. Even know this?
Yeah, of course.
You remember graffiti?
Yeah,
my brother was awesome at it. He had memorized all the graffiti. He was great at it, but I was like, look, normal people are not going to do that. And so when BlackBerry came out and they had like a standard keyboard, like everyone started using that. And it was pretty clear to me, like, that was why that won. And that's what I was writing about in this article, which is funny because like the iPhone came out and totally smoked the BlackBerry and made like the QWERTY keyboard look antiquated. But yeah, there it is. My first.
This is amazing. Yeah. You're talking about wireless 3G download speed. Remember 3G? Remember like waiting 10 minutes?
It was a big deal. I like this stuff too. This, like, everyone's blog had this. Like, what I read, Economist, New York Times.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, of course.
That was quite funny.
This is amazing.
Yeah. I didn't have a lot of me like doing drinking on MySpace or anything. I didn't have a lot of that to delete.
Never did MySpace.
All right, are we done with the nerdy human computer interface design segment? Let's move on to
we are
okay.
What is the
Reddit thing that you got?
Oh yes, okay, so I'm excited to talk about this because this is basically what I do all day. So Reddit, they're about halfway through their deal with Google and OpenAI.
Oh, right. Yes.
Or for people who don't yet know, Reddit signed a $60 million deal about 18 months ago at the beginning of 2024 with Google to deeply integrate essentially all of Google's products with Reddit through AI and through search. So essentially, Google Search is now heavily indexing Reddit. All of the Google's AI use Reddit information to train the LLMs. Likewise, they also have a maybe like $150 million deal with OpenAI to basically do exactly the same thing. They're about halfway through this deal. It has about 18 more months through the end of 2026. And now they're starting to explore what's next, right? They need to project 18 months forward, see if they still want to do this data sharing. I know for a fact that Reddit is pushing heavily towards Reddit Answers, but they're also leveraging a lot of Google's tech to improve their app product. I'm sure Google is sharing a ton of knowledge on how to make app perform and what algorithms to use and how to identify high purchasing intent audience, et cetera, et cetera. Very, very excited to see where this goes.
What do you think is the, will they continue? Like, what is the implication of this? I have no idea, to be honest.
What's the implication of this? So like, yeah. So a few changes, right? Google made a SEO change where it just basically says, we don't care about anything that's on the second page onward in search results anymore. Like, so only the front page matters. What that also means is now you have like less than 10 slots to get your things in front of people when they type into a search query. I think like Google is essentially saying, look, we'll give you all of the search intent traffic. And in turn, you feed us everything that people are talking about, typing into a browser on your website, and we'll use that to train our AI product.
Do you think it'll remain valuable for Google in a couple, like in 18 months when it's over?
Yeah, of course. Like I think Reddit data right now is the only place where it's not completely, utterly overrun by bots. It's really interesting because like I've been like doing this like Reddit marketing for the past like a month, and yeah. You can see people are catching on. Like every 3 months, people catch on to like whatever the newest AI is, and they can mm-hmm. immediately identify and call out AI bots.
Oh, the content, yeah.
The AI content. So there's a always constant iteration process between new AI product flooding the market with AI content, people realizing it, catching on, and then the game resumes. It's really interesting.
Yeah, what I don't know is like, you know, is the data that, I guess for Google, it's not a large sum of money.
It's not a large sum of money at all.
Right, yeah. They know they're getting high quality data.
Correct.
And there's like probably less of that out there now, at least from the train on, than there was.
Correct.
Right. Like, yeah. So there's like, they're like the blogging, they kind of destroyed the blog world, right? Like all the bloggers have just kind of given up.
Yeah. All the blog is dead. Correct. It's all AI slop.
You're not going to get great content on blogs anymore. Correct. They own YouTube. So they have all of that, which I think is awesome quality content that they can train on. And Reddit would be like where they would get current text-based content because they're blocked from Twitter.
Correct.
Do you think the content on Twitter is still high quality, even with all the bots? And I mean, no. There's always been a lot of bots in there, but
no, I don't think so. It's just too much bots.
Yeah, I just think the quality just declined too in general compared to what it was.
The algorithm. I think like the problem with algorithms, right? It's manipulatable by traffic amount. So like bot traffic definitely can change the shape of the algorithm. Because there's just like you can spam so much of it and it's completely permissionless. That means, you know, unless the platform says you can't publish anymore and we ban your account, you can publish however you want, even if nobody sees it. But it all gets factored into the algorithm.
All right, dude, I'm changing the subject. I'm sharing this.
Go for it.
Moving on to meme stocks. We only have like 10 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we covered meme stocks.
Talk about this open.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. So Open Door is another meme stock. And if you haven't heard, they are a company that was so actually the story is quite hilarious. They were a Chamath SPAC that went public at a giant valuation. Like this stock is barely trading at $10 now. It was like below a dollar for a long time. I think it went public at like and hit $30 or $35 a share. And so the company is a like prop tech real estate play, that helps facilitate transactions between sellers and buyers. Right. The model is that they just buy the home from you for cash rather than like you spending a lot of effort to sell it. They buy from you, they give you cash up front, and then they go and sell the home. So it's not like, it's not a crazy or ridiculous business. Like it's got a lot of issues. Like buying homes isn't necessarily easy, and they hold a lot of inventory on their books.
Yeah.
Like create yeah. challenges for like their financials of how the company works. But I think the model makes sense that like there's a lot of people out there who would rather just sell and get cash or in a position where like that's what they need to do. Outside of like the very elite, like New York, San Francisco, Bay Area, LA markets, right? Like most people's homes are not worth millions of dollars like they are in those markets. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, just want to be able to sell and do it easily. So I think this company facilitates that. So of course, like with interest rates going up, it crashed the real estate market, it crashed this stock, and it languished at like 30 cents for a very long time. Until some analysts came by and, you know, real estate market started to soften over the last couple of years. And there's a lot of rumors about rates coming down. And then lo and behold, rates did actually come down. And that has been a huge catalyst to send this stock up. And there was a financial analyst who came out and said, hey, I think this stock's going to go to something like $80 a share. And he's a legit analyst, like Wall Street analyst. He got a lot of flack for it because he essentially, you know, made a call on like what is a penny stock. So the stock was trading under a dollar, which it's not like it's illegal or you can't do it or you're not supposed to do it. It's that when you make a call like that and you have a big name and you have a reputation, you can expect to move the stock. But when you do it to a penny stock, you're gonna make it go ballistic. And right. It did. Stock went to a crazy number. Right, went from like 50 cents to $10. And then there's so much momentum behind it now. They've got a new CEO. There's a whole bunch of like PR happening all over Twitter. So obviously there's a plan here to kind of like take this newfound meme-based social media momentum and harness that to try to like, you know, push the company forward.
That's amazing. So what do you, okay. So I feel like the most important part is two things, right? So endorsement from a well-known trader, right? And then the second thing is Open Door has a decent story to tell, right? Like everybody understands what they're doing. Millennials, Gen Zs have problems buying a house or selling a house. So they're in a good market, a large market. But like, what do you, what's the one reason you think they pushed it to $10?
Yeah, you're getting the heart of like, what is the like meme stock playbook, right? Because that's what right. they seem to be tapping into. So you're right, there needs to be some clear fundamentals. If you look at like, let's call the other like meme stocks out there that I would perhaps define as meme stocks is stocks like Tesla. They're sure. disconnected from the financials of the company. They seem to trade in relation to the like public perception of Elon and Tesla. Very similar to how crypto trades. Like crypto doesn't have any, or most don't have any financial underlying metrics you could use to value it.
Yeah.
And so they kind of just trade based on perception.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's what defines a meme stock. They're just trading on some kind of perception. They're just disconnected from the financial. So Tesla's one. And then you had like a couple of famous ones like GameStop and AMC during the pandemic where the same thing happened.
Right.
But I think what people saw was like, if these things catch on, you can like, if you're management, you can like harness that enthusiasm and excitement. And, you know, take that positive momentum and try to do some interesting things with the business. I think that's exactly what Elon does for sure, right? Like, you know, to his credit, like he did produce an electric car at scale. Like, it's incredible. Like, no one was ever able to achieve that. A lot of it was the fact that he had a group of enthusiastic kids in their basement or young men with trading stocks on Robinhood who were willing to like buy that stock. And like that was a big part of why they were able to do that, because their borrowing costs and their access to capital markets was, I don't know the exact right term, but it was softened by the fact that they had all these people that were willing to just kind of like invest, give them money and not worry about like what the underlying financials were, the way that a professional financial firm, hedge fund,
right.
mutual fund, whatever it is, would look at the stock and ask for if you were going to make that stock purchase. Mm.
So essentially, like you're saying, for meme stocks, their investor makeup is very, very different from like a traditional blue chip, let's say.
So far. meme hedge funds emerge and stuff. Like maybe, I don't know. Like it's totally possible. But what it seems to be today is like, yeah, they tap into a bunch of like retail investors. Enough of them out there with enough money that if they're like coordinating on the internet, they can like pump a stock. And the management see that and are taking advantage of it. So like Open Door now, they made an announcement that they got rid of their like PR team and investment relations team, and the way they were doing it that you would typically do for Wall Street, that's no longer happening. And they have a new CEO who's just communicating directly with people on Twitter, because I think he correctly recognizes his shareholder base are people out there who just are retail investors. They're not the Wall Street people that most investment relations committees and PR agencies and the whole approach is designed to cater to, right? So
yeah.
I think it's quite smart. And I'm excited about it. I threw a few dollars at it one day. I was joking. I was like really high on coffee very early when this thing started to emerge. I'm like, oh, there's a new meme stock. I'm like, this will be fun. Boom. And then I was like, oh my God, this has been hilarious. So obviously like I do not recommend this stock. It's a crazy stock. It's vastly disconnected from any kind of like financial metrics.
Yeah.
I think it's a difficult business too, right? You're buying something homes. So like it's hard to get an efficiency from technology. The way that like Tesla actually has like patents and real core technology, you could make an argument that the company is perhaps worth some of the valuations that it's achieved, because it has like real patentable technology advantage. Like they make their own chips and stuff, right? But sure. Like Open Door is not
sure.
Making computer chips. They just like buy and sell homes like anybody could, and they have like an Excel sheet somewhere they track it on or something.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm also just looking up this mythical trader. Apparently, he's from Toronto, Eric Jackson.
Oh, is yeah. He's got like a big hit. I don't follow him that closely, but he's like, you know, a legitimate. He's not a thin twit account.
So this is hilarious. Okay, so the way that he got a lot of attention is he waited outside Drake's home. Holding a sign that says buy Open Door.
No,
that's what he did. That's how he got
I love it.
This is amazing.
I think it's highly entertaining. Like I'm excited by it, and I think it's really interesting that like there's like this new meme alternative where companies now recognize that hey, we're like, I don't know if you can facilitate it, but if you can like achieve meme stock status and embrace it, like it can be really good for the company. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, oh my God, this is amazing.
I think a lot of people don't like this, this is the world we live in today. I think
totally. Yeah. However you get attention, right? Like if you get attention, it's an attention economy.
I wasn't around for the like railroad boom in the 19th century, like railroad stocks. But everything I've ever read about it makes it sound like they're like meme stocks. Like people were just buying up railroad stocks. Like all of these economic bubbles throughout history, right?
Yeah,
the South Sea bubble, the tulip bubble, the Mississippi, there's a ton of them, right? And you look at those charts and the same thing. Valuations were like
skyrocketing.
It becomes disconnected from the economic reality because just people get excited. And I mean, I maybe there's no other more powerful human emotion than FOMO.
Right. Exactly.
You just want to be in on the latest, coolest
on the trend.
Thing.
On the trend.
All right. Is that all we have for today?
That's all. Do we need to leave it on a meme, or was
we do any meme? I don't have any Sydney Sweeney memes.
I guess meme stock is the meme of the week.
We can do this one. I have the I have a good FinTwit meme. I've got the happy Federal Reserve rate cut day for those who celebrate of the of the dumb money guy.
Tendies.
I think that fits well for what what we're talking about today.
Exactly. All right.
All right, Paul.
I think we're good.
That was fun.
That was fun.